All right. It's time for the open mic portion. Thanks for sticking around. Hope everybody caught their breath, got a drink, got some air outside. And we're going to kick it off tonight with Mr. Matt Yucia.
Oh, Lord. All right. This is called Female Urinal in the Basement of the Museum of Ceramics in East Liverpool, Ohio. It's sort of my ode to a Grecian urn, really. It can be found deep under the toxic haze of a post-industrial nightmarescape, among the artifacts of times just as dirty and unprosperous, even if history doesn't remember them that way. It's there, on a top shelf in a display case, against the wall in the basement, placed no doubt for the sake of delicate sensibilities and to avoid awkward conversations with children. It's cream-colored and less than a foot in length. The handle on top aligns with the pointed oval-shaped opening. The reservoir is shaped like a bulb with a flat bottom. Tiny cracks all over the enamel betray its age and shop-worn nature. I saw it once. I stood transfixed by it. Surely it must be the artifact's artifact, with its own secret history of intimacies that dinner plates and teapots just can't compete with. And yes, I thought about the bodies it serviced, the shop girls too busy to leave the factory floor, the homemakers in need of relief in a deep winter night, and the proper ladies whose modesty was finally overrun by pragmatism. Forgive me and my male gaze, thwarted by the passage of time. After all, museums are supposed to be dens of curiosity. Two, this is called Supermarket in Homestead, Pennsylvania. Oh, what thoughts I have of you this afternoon, Allen Ginsberg, as I immerse myself into grumpy middle age and the waterfront giant eagle. It started in the parking lot, abnormally full for a weekday afternoon, when I remember with slight dread, it's the first Friday of the month. I was busted right at the front door by a food demo specialist hawking oranges. She gave me my first hit of a real blood orange, and a doorway opened to a deep, dark world of low acid with a hint of berry aftertaste. I was hooked for life right before she told me they were all out. And it continued. They changed the design of the plastic bags for the bread I buy, and the new layout. I used to know this store like the back of my hand, I grumble. So crowded. And where the hell are the vegetarian refried beans? The kind of coffee I like was discontinued, too. I can't read the handwriting on my own list. Crisscrossing the aisle several times, a poem starts to build in my mind. This store is a trough where misery feeds itself. Of course, this means humanity is a sty, and I'm the prime porker. Then I noticed the woman next to me started to dance with her full cart to the Whitney Houston song being played. Someone's grandmother, like my own 20 years gone now, babushka and all, counts money in a white bank envelope. My cashier wears a union pin, reclaiming ground from Frick's army of Pinkertons once again. The promises of payday and the New Deal realized. It can be so easy to forget about my place at the common table of the human family, and to do so is to ruin one of the greatest words in the English language, groceries. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Somehow I just knew Whitney Houston was playing in that grocery store. Next up, we've got Michelle Marr. Come on up, Michelle.
The hazard of being short. Thank you. Like others tonight, I want to thank Chris and Joan and the patron saint of the Hemingway series, Jimmy. We're going to have the presidential election next year in 2020. And I've been hearing talk as the Democratic lineup was debating about whether America was really ready for a woman president. Would it be possible that one would be elected? And that makes me think about how women are seen. And so there are two poems tonight that I'm reading about how we see women. Tips. He looked down at his lap holding my latest paper and told me how after he got the university job, he couldn't support his wife and child. He drove cabs until he picked up his department chair one night from the airport and then started getting summer classes to teach. He said lots of businessmen were lousy tippers, out-of-towners a little better, but the best of all were hookers. His job was to keep the seats clean and open doors for them. Most had kids, and a few showed him pictures, usually toddlers or babies, no men. He got a job driving a cab in South Bend and spent evenings running people all over town, to the airport, bars, or campus. He said his favorite was one who looked like Eartha Kitt in a white sequin top, white mini, and knee-high go-go boots to match. She'd tell him what lottery numbers to play, my little girl's birthday, and where to get a good meal, cheap. I said I wanted to write, maybe be a teacher like him someday. Whores give the best tips, he said, handing my paper back. The second poem is called, If You Really Want to Grow a Pair, Try Breasts. Kathy stops me in the hall between classes, her voice hushed like the papers blowing across the floor, to say that her son, a heroin addict, has run away again, and that she's just been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. Emma, our youngest, who came out at age 12, says bullshit to the catechism teacher who says homosexuality is a disorder. Biete Mariana de Jesus Mahe, a Guatemalan migrant mother, reunites with her seven-year son after suing the government when no one would tell her where he was being held. It's not fair for a mother. It's like they're putting a knife in your chest and killing you. Virginia, 18, a college freshman whose father died years before, stands alone, slender, by her mother's casket in a funeral parlor in case any visitors appear. Judy Scott speaks in court, voice as steady as rain as a drum, to the police officer who killed her son by shooting him 5 times in the back when he fled from a traffic stop. I forgive you, and I pray for you that you will repent and let Jesus come into your life. Just as you are, he will forgive you. Thank you.
Well, if we determined elections simply by the popular vote, we would have a woman president. So that gives me hope going into 2020. Third up tonight, we've got Sawyer Braun. Sawyer? Okay, come on up.
All right, this poem I think I read last year on open mic. It's called Patton. A tank named Patton, once a seasoned war machine, now a gentle pacifist, hadn't seen action since Korea. Static and stoic, proudly displayed on a headquarters lawn. Done fighting, now remembering, reflecting the honor of troops, revered by those he protected, respected for his service. Barreling around the corner, a driver paid no attention to speed limits or pedestrians or to Patton and his tons of armor. Gas puddle plunged into the floorboard, a Jeep plunged into Patton. The driver snapped. First his mind, then his legs, wrist, ribs, neck. A mangled mess wrapped in warped metal and plastic. Took an hour for the jaws of life to remove the dead. Nudged only an inch by the impact, but he shuddered at the loss. Patton's war was over, yet he killed a man, a soldier, like one of the men he fought for a half century ago. Once adorned with looks of beaming admiration, now replaced by countenances of sorrow, his history of righteous killing drowned in the wake of tragedy. He wished for the widow's tears to rust him, begged to surrender his hull for scrap. An honorable end, he cried, denied, never to forget nor forgive himself.
All right, we're going to close it out really hot tonight with Mr. Paul Z. Paul, come on up here.
Thank you. 12 lines, one title, 3-4 line scenes, and core reads as a group of titled Rachel Professor. Anselm, there is no God yet vitamin. Egregiously task the innuendo, half again sadden to be forgetful, appear as you define drug from a cave. The existentialist encumbrance oops, anticlimactic plaid esophagus. Have at it full tilt or ring toss a wig, air guitar of adult idiocy. Cosmos sped evanesce, Ku Klux septic. Hoe down tantrum fuse, a duck egg could nest. Hikeable welfare fraud, group mustered core. Make a difference, chime in, reap litter. Thanks.